This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents Fearless 14 by Janet Ivanovich. Read for you by Lorelei King. Chapter 1. In my mind, my kitchen is filled with crackers and cheese, roast chicken leftovers, farm fresh eggs, and coffee beans ready to grind. The reality is that I keep my Smith & Wesson in the cookie jar, my Oreos in the microwave, a jar of peanut butter and hamster food in the over-the-counter cupboard, and I have beer and olives in the refrigerator. I used to have a birthday cake in the freezer for emergencies, but I ate it. Truth is, I would dearly love to be a domestic goddess, but the birthday cake keeps getting eaten. I mean, you buy it and you eat it, right? And then where are you? No birthday cake. Ditto cheese and crackers and eggs and the roast chicken leftovers, which were from my mother. The coffee beans are light years away. I don't own a grinder. I guess I could buy two birthday cakes, but I'm afraid I'd eat both. My name is Stephanie Plum. And in my defense, I'd like to say that I have bread and milk on my shopping list, and I don't have any communicable diseases. I'm 5'7". My hair is brown and shoulder length and naturally curly. My eyes are blue. My teeth are mostly straight. My manicure was pretty good 3 days ago, and my shape is okay. I work as a bond enforcement agent for my cousin Vinny. And today I was standing in Loretta Rizzi's kitchen, thinking not only was Loretta ahead of me in the kitchen needs a makeover race, but she made me look like a piker in the loose cannon club. It was 8 a.m, and Loretta was wearing a long pink flannel nightgown and holding a gun to her head. "I'm gonna shoot myself," Loretta said. "Not that it would matter to you because you get your money dead or alive, right?" "Technically, that's true," I told her, "but dead is a pain in the tuchus. There's paperwork." A lot of the people Vinny bonds out are from my Chambersburg neighborhood in Trenton, New Jersey. Loretta Rizzi was one of those people. I went to school with Loretta. She's a year older than me, and she left high school early to have a baby. Now she was wanted for armed robbery, and she was about to blow her brains out. Vinny had posted Loretta's bond, and Loretta had failed to show for her court appearance, so I was dispatched to drag her back to jail. And, as luck would have it, I walked in at a bad moment and interrupted her suicide. "I just wanted a drink," Loretta said. "Yeah, but you held up a liquor store. Most people would have gone to a bar."
"I didn't have any money, and it was hot, and I needed a Tom Collins."
A tear rolled down Loretta's cheek.
"I've been thirsty lately," she said.
Loretta is a half a head shorter than me. She has curly black hair and a body kept toned by hefting serving trays for catered affairs at the firehouse. She hasn't changed much since high school. A few crinkle lines around her eyes, a little harder set to her mouth. She's Italian-American and related to half the burg, including my off-and-on boyfriend, Joe Morelli. "This was your first offense, and you didn't shoot anyone. Probably you'll get off with a hand slap," I told Loretta.
"I had my period," she said. "I wasn't thinking right."
Loretta lives in a rented row house on the edge of the burg. She has 2 bedrooms, 1 bath, a scrubbed clean cracker box kitchen, and a living room filled with secondhand furniture. Hard to make ends meet when you're a single mother without a high school diploma. The back door swung open, and my sidekick Lula stuck her head in.
"What's going on here? I'm tired of waiting in the car. I thought this was going to be a quick pickup, and then we were going for breakfast."
Lula is a former hoe, turned bonds office file clerk and wheelman. She's a plus-size black woman who likes to squash herself into 2 small clothes featuring animal print and spandex. Lula's cup runneth over from head to toe. "Loretta is having a bad morning," I said.
Lula checked Loretta out. "I can see that. She's still in her 90.
"Notice anything else?" I asked Lula.
"You mean like she's trying to style her hair with a Smith & Wesson?"
"I don't want to go to jail," Loretta said.
"It's not so bad," Lula told her. "If you can get them to send you to the workhouse, you'll get dental."
"I'm a disgrace," Loretta said.
Lula shifted her weight on her spike-heeled Manolo knockoffs.
You'll be more than a disgrace if you pull that trigger. You'll have a big hole in your head, and your mother won't be able to have an open casket viewing. And who's going to clean up the mess it'll make in your kitchen?
I have an insurance policy, Loretta said. If I kill myself, my son Mario will be able to manage until he can get a job. If I go to jail, he'll be on his own without any money.
Insurance policies don't pay out on suicides, Lula said.
Oh, crap. Is that true? Loretta asked me.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know why you're worried about that. You have a big family. Someone will take care of Mario.
It's not that easy. My mother is in rehab from when she had the stroke. She can't take him. And my brother Dom can't take him. He just got out of jail 3 days ago. He's on probation.
What about your sister?
My sister's got her hands full with her own kids. Her rat-turd husband left her for some pre-puberty lap dancer.
There must be someone who can babysit for you, Lula said to Loretta.
Everyone's got their own thing going, and I don't want to leave Mario with just anybody. He's very sensitive and artistic.
I counted back and placed her kid in his early teens. Loretta had never married, and so far as I know, she'd never fingered a father for him.
Maybe you could take him, Loretta said to me.
What?
No. No, 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 no. Just until I can make bail, and then I'll try to find someone more permanent.
If I take you in now, Vinny can bond you out right away.
Yeah, but if something goes wrong, I need someone to pick Mario up after school.
What can go wrong?
I don't know. A mother worries about these things. Promise you'll pick him up if I'm still in jail. He gets out at 2:30.
She'll do it, Lula said to Loretta. Just put the gun down and go get dressed so we can get this over and done. I need coffee. I need one of those extra greasy breakfast sandwiches. I gotta clog my arteries on account of otherwise, the blood rushes around too fast, and I might get a dizzy spell.
Lula was sprawled on the brown Naugahyde couch hugging the wall in the bond's office, and Vinny's office manager, Connie Rizzoli, was at her desk. Connie and the desk had been strategically placed in front of Vinny's inner office door with the hope it would discourage pissed-off pimps, bookies, and other assorted lowlifes from rushing in and strangling Vinny.
What do you mean she isn't bonded out?
I asked Connie, my voice rising to an octave normally only heard from Minnie Mouse.
She has no money to secure the bond and no assets. That's impossible. Everyone has assets.
What about her mother? Her brother? She must have 100 cousins living in a 10-mile radius.
She's working on it, but right now she has nothing. Bupkis, nada. So Vinny's waiting on her.
Yeah, and it's almost 2:30, Lula said. You better go get her kid like you promised.
Connie swiveled her head toward me, and her eyebrows went up to her hairline.
You promised to take care of Mario?
I said I'd pick him up if Loretta wasn't bonded out in time. I didn't know there'd be an issue with her bond.
Oh, boy, Connie said. Good luck with that one.
Loretta said he was sensitive and artistic.
I don't know about the sensitive part, but his art is limited to spray paint. He's probably defaced half of Trenton. Loretta has to pick him up from school because they won't let him on a school bus.
I hiked my bag onto my shoulder. I'm just driving him home. That was the deal.
There might be some gray area in the deal, Lula said. You might have said you'd take care of him. And anyways, you can't dump him in an empty house. You get child services after you for doing that.
Well, what the heck am I supposed to do with him? Lula and Connie did, I don't know, shoulder shrugs. Maybe I can sign for Loretta's bond, I said to Connie.
I don't think that'll fly, Connie said. You're the only person I know who has fewer assets than Loretta.
Great!
I huffed out of the office and rammed myself into my latest POS car. It was a Nissan Sentra that used to be silver but was now mostly rust. It had donut-sized wheels, a Jaguar hood ornament, and a bobblehead Tony Stewart doll in the back window. I like Tony Stewart a lot, but seeing his head jiggling around in my rearview mirror doesn't do much for me. Unfortunately, he was stuck on with crazy glue, and nothing short of dismantling the car was going to get him out of my life. Loretta had given me a photo of Mario and a pickup location. I cruised to a spot where a group of kids were shuffling around looking for their rides. Easy to spot Mario. He resembled Morelli when Morelli was his age. Wavy black hair and slim build. Some facial similarities, although Morelli has always been movie star handsome, and Mario was a little short of movie star. Of course, I might have been distracted by the multiple silver rings piercing his eyebrows, ears, and nose. He was wearing black and white Converse sneakers, stovepipe jeans with a chain belt, a black t-shirt with Japanese characters, and a black denim jacket. Morelli had been an early bloomer. He grew up fast and hard. His dad was a mean drunk, and Morelli got good with his hands as a kid. He could use them in a fight, and he could use them to coax girls out of their clothes. The first time Morelli and I played doctor, I was 5 years old, and he was seven. He's periodically repeated the performance, and lately we seem to be a couple. He's a cop now, and against all odds, he's mostly lost the anger he had growing up. He inherited a nice little house from his Aunt Rose, and has become domestic enough to own a dog and a toaster. He hasn't as yet reached the crockpot, toilet seat down, live plant in the kitchen level of domesticity. Mario looked like a late bloomer. He was short for his age and had "desperate geek" written all over him. I got out of my car and walked to the group of kids. "Mario Rizzi?"
"Who wants to know?"
"I do," I said. "Your mother can't pick you up today. I promised her I'd bring you home." This produced some moronic comments and snickers from Mario's idiot friends.
"The name is Zook," Mario said to me. "I don't answer to Mario."
I rolled my eyes, grabbed Zook by the strap on his backpack, and towed him to my car.
"This is a piece of shit," he said,
hands dangling at his sides, taking the car in. "And?" He shrugged and wrenched the door open.
"Just saying."
I drove the short distance to the bond's office and pulled to the curb.
"What's this?"
he asked. "Your mother's been returned to lockup because she failed to show for her court appearance. She can't make her bail, and I can't take you home to an empty house, so I'm parking you in the bond's office until I can find a better place for you."
"No."
"What do you mean, no? No isn't an option."
"I'm not getting out of the car."
"I'm a bounty hunter. I could rough you up or shoot you or something if you don't get out of the car."
"I don't think so. I'm just a kid. Juvie would be all over your ass. And your eye is twitching."
I hauled my cell phone out of my bag and dialed Morelli.
"Help,"
I said.
"Now what?"
"You remember your cousin Loretta's kid, Mario?"
"Vaguely."
"I've got him in my car and he refuses to leave."
"Possession is 9/10 of the law."
Zook was slouched down, watching me from the corner of his eye, arms crossed over his chest, sullen. I blew out a sigh and told Morelli the deal with Loretta.
"I'm off at 4, Morelli said. "If Loretta isn't bonded out by then, I'll take the kid off your hands. In the meantime, he's all yours, Cupcake."
I disconnected and dialed Lula.
"Yeah?"
Lula said. "I'm outside and I have Loretta's kid in the car." Lula's face appeared in the front window to the bond's office.
"I see you and the kid. What's going on?"
"He won't get out of the car," I said. "I thought you might help persuade him."
"Sure," Lula said. "I could persuade the hell out of him."
The bond's office door opened, and Lula swung her ass over to my car and yanked the door open.
"What's up?"
Lula said to the kid. Zook didn't answer, still pouting.
"I'm here to escort you out of the car,"
Lula said, leaning in, filling the doorframe with her red hair extensions and acres of chocolate-colored boob barely contained in a low scooped-neck zebra-striped sweater. Zook focused on Lula's gold tooth with the diamond chip, and below that what seemed like a quarter mile of cleavage, and his eyes almost fell out of his head.
"Cripes,"
he said, kind of croaky voice, shrinking back into his seat, fumbling to get out of his seatbelt.
"I got away with men,"
Lula said to me. "He's not a man," I told her. "He's just a kid."
"Am too a man," he said. "Want me to prove it?"
"No," Lula and I said in unison.
"What's this?"
Connie wanted to know when the three of us walked into the bond's office. "I need to leave Mario someplace for an hour while I hop over to Range Man."
"I told you my name is Zook. And what's Range Man?"
"I work with a guy named Ranger, and Range Man is a security company he owns."
"Are you the Zook that writes his name all over town?"
Lula asked him.
"And what kind of name is that anyway?"
"It's my minion fire name."
"What's a minion fire?"
"Are you kidding me? You don't know minion fire? Minion fire's only the world's most popular, most powerful, totally awesome, badass, difficult game. Don't tell me you've never heard of the Nation of Minion Fire."
"In my neighborhood, we only got the Nation of Bloods, Crips, and Islam.
Maybe a few Baptists, but they don't hardly count anymore, Lula said.
Zook took his laptop out of his backpack.
I can hook up here, right?
Don't you have homework? Connie asked him.
I did my homework in detention. I gotta check on Moondog. He's a griefer, and he's massing the wood elves.
That caught Lula's attention.
Are these wood elves the same as Santa's elves?
Wood elves are evil, and they can only be stopped by a third-level Blybold wizard like Zook.
You don't look like no Blybold wizard, Lula said. You look like a kid that's drilled too many holes in himself. You keep doing that and stuff's gonna start leaking out.
Zook's hand unconsciously went to his ear with the six piercings.
Chicks dig it.
Yeah, Lula said. They probably all want to borrow your earrings.
Getting back to the problem at hand, I said, I need to park Mario or Zook or whoever the heck he is. Ranger wants to talk to me about working a job for him.
Oh boy, Lula said.
A real job, I told her.
Sure, Lula said. I knew that. What kind of job?
I don't know.
Oh boy, Lula said.
Carlos Manoso is my age, but his life experience is worlds away. He's of Cuban heritage and has family in Newark and Miami. He's dark-skinned, dark-eyed, and his hair is dark brown and currently cut too short for a ponytail, but long enough to fall across his forehead when he's sleeping or otherwise occupied in bed. He's got a lot of muscle in all the right places and a killer smile that is rarely seen. His street name is Ranger, a leftover from his time in Special Forces. When I started working for Vincent Plum Bail Bonds, Ranger was doing mostly bounty hunter work and was my mentor. He's now co-owner of a security company with branches in Boston, Atlanta, and Miami. He wears only black. He smells like Bulgari green shower gel. He's extremely private, and he eats healthy food. I'd be tempted to say he isn't a lot of fun, but he has his moments. And on those rare occasions when we've been intimate, wow. Rangeman Security is on a side street in Center City, Trenton. It's housed in an inconspicuous seven-story brick building, the name visible only on a small plaque above the door buzzer. The seventh floor is Ranger's private apartment. Two more floors are dedicated to housing Rangeman employees. One floor is occupied by the property manager and his wife, Ella. The fifth floor is Control Central, and the remaining two floors are conference rooms, first-floor reception, and private offices. There are two levels below ground, and I've never gotten the personal tour, but I imagine dungeons and armories and Ranger's personal tailor toiling away. I key fobbed my way into the underground garage and parked next to Ranger's black Porsche Turbo. I took the elevator to the fifth floor, waved hello to the guys at the monitoring stations, and walked across the room to Ranger's office. The door was open, and Ranger was at his desk, talking on a headset. His eyes went to me, he wrapped up his conversation and removed the headset.
Babe, he said.
Babe covered a lot of ground with Ranger. It could be good, bad, amused, or filled with desire. Today, it was hello. I sat in the chair across from his desk. What's up?
I need a date, Ranger said.
Is date synonymous with sex?
No, it's synonymous with business, but I could throw some sex in as a bonus if you're interested.
This got a smile from me. I wasn't interested for a bunch of complicated reasons, not the least of which was Joe Morelli. Still, it was nice to know the offer was on the table. What's the business?
I've been asked to provide security for Brenda.
The Brenda, the singer?
Yes, she'll be in town for 3 days doing a concert, some media, and a charity fundraiser. I'm supposed to keep her dry and drug-free and out of harm's way. If I assign one of my men to her, she'll eat him alive and spit him out in front of the press. So I'm taking the watch, and I need someone riding shotgun.
What about Tank? Tank is Ranger's next in command, and he's the guy Ranger trusts to watch his back. Tank's called Tank because that's what he is. He's 7 feet of muscle packed into a 6'4" no-neck body. Tank is also Lula's current boyfriend.
Brenda's management team has requested security be invisible at public functions, and it's hard to hide Tank, Ranger said. Tank and Hal will work shifts standing guard at Brenda's hotel. When she's at large, we'll take over. She can pass us off as traveling companions, and you can go into the ladies' room with her and make sure she doesn't test drive mushrooms.
Doesn't she have her own bodyguard?
He slipped and broke his ankle getting off the plane last night. They've shipped him back to California.
I'm surprised you're taking this on.
I'm doing it as a favor for Lou Pepper, the concert promoter.
Ranger passed a sheet of paper to me.
This is Brenda's public appearance schedule. We need to be at her hotel a half hour ahead. And we're on call. If she leaves her room, we're there.
I looked at the schedule and chewed on my lower lip. Morelli wasn't going to be happy to have me spending this much time with Ranger. And Brenda was a car crash. Like Cher and Madonna, she didn't use a last name, just Brenda. She was 61 years old. She'd been married 8 times. She could crack walnuts with her ass muscles. And she was rumored to be mean as a snake. I couldn't remember her last album, but I knew she had a cabaret act going. Babysitting Brenda had Nightmare written all over it.
Babe, Ranger said, reading my thoughts, I don't ask a lot of favors.
I blew out a sigh, folded the paper, and put it in my jeans pocket. Looks like the fundraiser is tonight. Meet and greet at 5:30. I'll meet you in her hotel lobby at 5. Zook was in the land of minion fire when I rolled into the bond's office. Connie was working on the computer at her desk, and Lula was packing up, getting ready to leave.
I gotta get home and beautify, Lula said. Tank's coming over tonight. This here's a third time this week I'll see him. I think this is getting serious. I wouldn't be surprised if he was gonna pop the question.
What question are you thinking about? Connie asked.
The big question. The M question. He probably would already have asked the M question, except he's so shy. I've been thinking I might help him along with it. Make it easy on him. Maybe I need to get him liquored up first so he's nice and relaxed. And maybe I'll stop at the jewelry district on the way home and get an engagement ring so he don't have to do a lot of shopping. You know how men hate shopping.
How are we doing with Loretta's bond? I asked Connie. Connie slid a glance at Zook bent over his laptop and then looked back at me. The silent communication was no luck so far. Hard to get someone to post a couple $1,000s in bond when the last person to post bond for Loretta ended up forfeiting their money. Lula had her bag on her shoulder and her car keys in her hand.
What'd Ranger want with you?
He's running security for Brenda for the next 3 days, and he wants me to ride shotgun. Morelli lived halfway between my apartment at the edge of Trenton proper and my parents' house in the Berg. It was a modest 2-story row house on a quiet street in a stable blue-collar neighborhood. Living room, dining room, kitchen, and powder room on the first floor. 3 small bedrooms and bath upstairs. So far as I know, he'd never eaten in the dining room. Morelli ate breakfast at the small table in the kitchen, lunch at the sink, and dinner in front of the television in the living room. There was a single-car garage at the back of the property, accessible by a rutted alley, but Morelli almost always parked his SUV at the curb in front of the house. The backyard was narrow and strictly utilitarian, only used by Morelli's dog, Bob. I parked and looked over at Zook. You know Joe Morelli, right?
Wrong.
You're related.
That's what I hear.
Zook studied the house.
I thought it would be bigger. It's all my uncle talks about since he got out of prison. He said it was supposed to go to him, but Morelli swindled him out of it.
Hard to believe of Morelli, I said.
I thought he was supposed to be the big, bad, tough cop and lady killer. What's he want with this dorkopolis?
In the beginning, I struggled with that one, too. I saw Morelli in a cool condo with a big-screen television and a kick-ass sound system, and maybe a pinball machine in his living room. Turns out Morelli was tired of sailing that ship. Morelli went into Rose's house with an open mind, and the house and Morelli took stock of each other and adapted. The house gave up some of its stuffiness, and Morelli dialed down his wild side. I pulled the key from the ignition, got out of the car, and walked to the front door with Zook trailing after me.
This is so lame, Zook said, dragging his feet. I can't believe my mother tried to rob a stupid booze shack.
I didn't know what to say to him. I didn't want to make out like armed robbery was okay, but at the same time, I didn't want to be gloom and doom. Sometimes good people do dumb things, I said. If you hang in there with your mom, it'll all work out. Eventually. Step back when I open the door or Morelli's dog will knock you over. I unlocked the door, and there was a woof and the sound of dog feet galloping toward us from the kitchen. Bob appeared, ears flapping, tongue out, slobber flying in all directions. He hurtled past us, leaped off the small porch, went straight to the nearest tree, and lifted his leg. Zook went wide-eyed.
What kind of dog is he?
We're not sure, but we think he's mostly Golden Retriever. His name is Bob. Bob peed for what seemed like half an hour and trotted back into the house. I closed the door after him and checked the time. 4 o'clock. Morelli's shift ended at 4. It would take him 30 minutes to drive home. I had to be dressed and at the hotel by 5. The hotel was 30 minutes from my apartment at this time of night. It wasn't going to work. Zook looked around Morelli's living room.
Can I go wireless here?
I don't know. Morelli's computer is upstairs in his office, but I've seen him work down here as well. Zook pulled his laptop out of his backpack.
I'll figure it out.
That's great, because I have to go. Morelli should be home any minute now. I'm going to trust you to stay here and wait for him and not get into trouble.
Sure,
Zook said. I called Morelli on his cell. Where are you?
I just turned on to Hamilton.
We're at your house. Unfortunately, I have a job at 5 and I have to go home first to change, so I'm going to leave Zook here alone for a few minutes.
Who's Zook?
You'll see. And just a suggestion, but you might want to put the Kojak light on the top of your car and step on the gas. Chapter 2. I live in a one-bedroom, one-bath unit on the second floor of a no-frills, three-story red-brick apartment building. There's a small lobby with a small, unreliable elevator. The front entrance looks out on a busy street filled with small businesses. The rear exit backs up to a tenant parking lot. My bedroom and living room windows look out at the parking lot. Lucky me, because this is the quiet side, except at 5 a.m. on Mondays and Thursdays when the dumpster gets emptied. I share my apartment with a hamster named Rex. I rocked to a stop in the lot, bolted from the car, bypassed the elevator, and took the stairs 2 at a time. I ran down the hall and rammed my key into my front door. I yelled hello to Rex on my way to the bedroom. No time for extended pleasantries. 10 minutes later, I was out the door in black heels and my little black suit with a white tank top under the jacket. I'd spruced up my makeup and fluffed out my hair, and I dropped my Smith & Wesson into my purse. The gun wasn't loaded, and I didn't have time to hunt for bullets, but if I had to whack someone in the head with my purse, it was nicely weighted. I took a call from Morelli while I unlocked my car.
I just walked into my house, and the kid is wearing a black satin cape. He only answers to the name Zook, and he seems obsessed with someone named Moondog.
Order a pizza and go with it, I told him. I was 5 minutes late when I pulled into hotel parking. This wouldn't be an issue if I was meeting anyone other than Ranger. Ranger has many good qualities. Patience isn't one of them. I ran through the parking garage, slid to a stop when I got to the hotel lobby, adjusted my skirt, and crossed to where Ranger was standing. He was wearing black slacks, black blazer, and a black dress shirt with a black tie. The black tie had a black stripe. If GQ ran an issue on contract killers, he'd make the cover. Nice, I said to him.
Playing the role, Ranger said.
I followed him to the third floor and the only suite in the hotel. Tank was in front of the suite door, arms crossed, feet at parade rest. He was dressed in the usual range man black t-shirt and cargo pants with a gun at his hip.
Any problems? Ranger asked. No, Tank replied. She's been inside since I came on duty. We'll take it from here, Ranger said.
I watched Tank walk to the elevator and thought about Lula out shopping for an engagement ring. I could sort of see Tank and Lula engaged, but the mental image of them settling into married life went right to the top of the bizarro meter. Ranger rapped on Brenda's door and waited. He rapped a second time. Maybe she's in the bathroom, I said. Ranger took a pass card from his pocket, inserted it in the lock, and opened the door.
See if you can find her.
I tiptoed into the entrance foyer and looked into the living room area. Hello, I called. A young woman popped out of the bedroom. She was slim, and her face was pinched and had the hungry, haunted look of someone who'd recently quit smoking. Her short dark hair was pushed behind her ears in a non-style. She was wearing a skirt and a cardigan and flat shoes. She didn't look happy.
Yes,
she asked. Security, I told her. We're here to escort Brenda.
She's getting dressed. Honestly,
Brenda yelled from the bedroom,
I don't know why I have to do these things.
Brenda was Kentucky born and raised. Her voice was country and her style was ballsy. From what I read in the tabloids, at 61 she was on a slippery slope as an aging star, and she wasn't going down gracefully. It's a charity event, the young woman said. It's a goodwill gesture. We're trying to erase the image of you running over that cameraman last month.
It was an accident.
You ran over his foot and then you put your car in reverse and knocked him down.
I got confused. For Christ's sake, get off my case. Who do you work for anyway? I want a glass of wine. Where's my wine? I specifically requested that the cooler be stocked with New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. I must have my Blanc.
I looked at my watch. Are you responsible for getting her there on time? I asked Ranger.
I'm responsible for getting her there alive.
I'm responsible for getting her there on time, the dark-haired woman said. I'm Nancy Colon. I'm the press secretary assigned to this trip. I work for Brenda's record company.
I have nothing to wear, Brenda said. What am I supposed to wear? Honestly, why am I always surrounded by amateurs? Is it too much to ask to have a stylist here? Where's my stylist? First no Blanc and now no stylist. How am I supposed to work under these conditions?
Nancy Colon disappeared into the bedroom, and 10 minutes later, Brenda swished out, followed by Nancy. Brenda was slim and toned and spray-tanned to something resembling orange mud. She had big boobs, lots of curly auburn hair tipped with blonde, and her lips looked like they'd been inflated with an air hose. She was wearing a red knit strapless tube dress that could double for skin, 4-inch spike-heeled shoes, and a white sheared mink jacket. She looked like Santa's senior off-season hoe. Ranger was standing pressed against my back, and I could feel him smile when Brenda entered the room. I gave him an elbow to the ribs, and he exhaled on a barely audible bark of laughter.
Look at who we got here,
Brenda said, eyeing Ranger.
I swear you are so hot I could just eat you up. Sugar, I gotta get me some of you.
Ranger's smile was still in place. Hard to tell if he was enjoying himself or being polite.
Stephanie and I are providing security, he said.
Do you have name?
Ranger.
Like the Long Ranger?
Brenda asked. There was a moment's pause while I debated correcting Brenda, but truth is, we all knew exactly what she was asking. Finally, Ranger stepped forward and opened the suite door.
Like an Army Ranger, he said.
Brenda slithered through the door, rubbing against Ranger in the process.
I hear Army guys have big guns.
Nancy and I did some eye-rolling, and Ranger remained pleasantly impassive. I was the last to leave the room.
I've seen your gun, I whispered to Ranger. Would you like me to tell her about it?
Not necessary, but we could discuss it over a glass of wine later.
Nancy took the lead and punched the elevator button. The doors opened, we stepped in, and Brenda moved close to Ranger.
So, hotcakes, are you with me for the night?
Stephanie and I will be with you until you return to your hotel room, Ranger said.
Sometimes I need my bodyguards to spend the entire night with me,
Brenda said to Ranger. This produced more eye-rolling from Nancy and me and more passive pleasantness from Ranger. The doors opened, and we moved into the crush of people in the lobby. Nancy led the way, and I followed Nancy with Brenda sandwiched between Ranger and me. We cut a swath through the crowd to the meet-and-greet room. Once we were inside the room and the door was closed behind us, the atmosphere became much more calm. These were patrons of the charity, and they'd paid a huge amount of money to have a private audience with Brenda. She accepted a champagne flute, drained it, and reached for a second. This isn't so bad, I said to Ranger. It's not like someone is shooting at her, and so far she hasn't totally exposed herself. You got groped in the elevator, but you're probably used to that.
Yeah, Ranger said. It happens a lot.
A 40-something woman approached Brenda. What is this? The woman asked, pointing to Brenda's jacket.
A jacket?
What kind of jacket?
What kind do you think it is?
I think it's mink.
Bingo,
Brenda said. You have a lot of nerve, the woman said. Was this done as a deliberate insult?
Sweetheart,
Brenda said,
when I insult someone, they know they've been insulted.
Nancy's eyes went to the size of goose eggs, and she frantically thumbed through her event schedule.
Oh, crap, she said. Oh, shit!
I looked over her shoulder and read down the clipboard. Thursday's event will benefit the humane treatment of animals. The woman narrowed her eyes at Brenda.
Take that offensive jacket off immediately.
Bite me,
Brenda said.
And what's your problem anyway?
Do you have any idea how many little minks it took to make that jacket?
Oh, please,
Brenda said.
Don't give me that tree hugger crap. Look, if it's an issue for you, just think of it as Russian weasel.
The woman snatched a glass of red wine from a waiter, dumped it on Brenda's jacket, and Brenda tossed her champagne in the woman's face. Ranger reached for Brenda, but Brenda already had her hands around the woman's throat. There was a lot of kicking and shrieking of obscenities, and by the time Ranger got the women separated, Brenda's boobs had popped out of her dress, and the skirt had ridden up to her waist. Ranger dispassionately yanked the dress up over Brenda's breasts and pulled the skirt down over her ass, apologized to the other woman, and dragged Brenda out of the room and into the lobby. Nancy and I rushed after Ranger and Brenda, and we all jumped into the elevator. Nancy crossed meet and greet off her schedule.
One down, she said. We have 10 minutes before the dinner.
Ranger and I elected not to sit at the head table with Brenda. We took a position on the wall toward the front of the room so we could better see if anyone was rushing at Brenda with a glass of red wine. Brenda had changed into a black satin bustier, tight jeans studded with rhinestones, and she had an animal-friendly black cashmere wrap draped over her shoulders. My cell phone vibrated, and I looked at the screen. It was Morelli calling. I need to take this, I said to Ranger. I'm going to step outside for a moment. I found a quiet corridor and dialed Morelli. How's it going? I asked Morelli.
I don't know. He hasn't stopped playing since I got home. He can play and eat at the same time. I think he took the computer into the bathroom with him. It's kind of creepy. You're coming back here tonight, right? Let me rephrase that. What time are you coming back here?
Hard to say. I'm running security for Brenda.
The Brenda?
Yeah, I'm working with Ranger. There was a full 60 seconds of silence where I suspected Morelli was staring down at his shoe, getting a grip. Morelli thought Ranger was a dangerous guy from multiple points of view, and Morelli was right. Don't you want to hear about Brenda? I asked him.
No, I don't care about Brenda. I care about you. I don't like you working with Ranger.
It's just for a couple days.
I'm out of the house at 6 tomorrow morning. You need to be here to make sure Picasso doesn't spray paint the dog again.
Zook painted Bob?
He did it before I got home. He said he had to protect Bob from the griefer. He pulls anything like that again, and I'm going to make the griefer look like the tooth fairy.
Ranger was leaning against the wall, arms crossed over his chest, calmly watching the room when I returned. Did I miss anything fun? I asked him. He made a small side-to-side movement with his head.
No.
Brenda's waving her glass around.
I told the waitstaff not to give her a refill, and she's feeling neglected.
Hey!
Brenda called to a passing waiter.
Hello!
The waiter scurried away, and Brenda waved the glass at another guy. Brenda lapped at the empty glass and waggled her tongue at the waiter. A red scald rose from his collar to the roots of his hair, and he ran for the kitchen. A waiter carrying plates of food passed behind Brenda, and in the blink of an eye, Brenda had the guy by his nuts. The waiter stopped in mid-stride, tray aloft, mouth open. I couldn't hear Brenda from where I stood, but I could read her lips.
I need a drinky-poo,
Brenda said to the waiter.
Nod your head if you understand.
The waiter nodded his head, and Brenda released him. I have to give her credit, I said to Ranger. She knows how to get a man's attention. An hour later, we escorted Brenda to her room.
I want a party,
Brenda said in the elevator.
Isn't there a party somewhere?
Ranger stayed stoic, saying nothing, and I followed his lead. If Brenda had been sober, she would have been hard to control. As it was, her eyes were unfocused and her attention span was short. The elevator doors opened, Brenda lurched out, walked into a potted plant, and got knocked on her ass.
Whoops, Brenda said. Where'd that come from?
Ranger scooped her up and pointed her in the right direction. She tried to grab him, and he jumped away.
You need to take point on this, Ranger said to me. If she grabs me one more time, I'm going to have to shoot her.
I linked arms with Brenda and walked her down the hall to her suite. I opened the door and maneuvered her inside. I herded her into the bedroom, and she crawled into bed, fully clothed. I turned the light off in the bedroom and joined Ranger in the living room. He locked the liquor cabinet, pocketed the key, and we left the suite.
Tank is the night off, and Hal doesn't come on until midnight, Ranger said. I'll stand guard until then.
I'll stand with you, I said, just in case Brenda comes out and attacks you, and you're tempted to shoot her. Chapter 3 Hal was one of the younger guys on Ranger's team. He was big and blonde and blushed when embarrassed. He was over-muscled and looked a little prehistoric. He showed up 10 minutes early.
Call me if there's a problem, Ranger said, giving Hal the room key. Don't go into the suite alone. If you need to enter and can't wait for me, get hotel security to go in with you.
Hal nodded.
Yes, sir.
Ranger walked me to the parking garage, gave me a friendly kiss goodnight that sent a flutter of emotion through me that I'd rather not name, and watched me drive away. I got back to Morelli's house a little after midnight. Morelli's porch light was on, and a nightlight was burning in the hall leading to the stairs. The rest of the house was dark. I unlocked the front door and stepped inside. The house was quiet. Everyone was asleep, including Bob Dog. I didn't need light to find my way around Morelli's house. I spent a decent amount of time there, and it was almost identical to the house where I grew up. I made my way into the kitchen and checked the fridge for leftovers, hitting the jackpot with pepperoni pizza. I put the pizza box on the counter, and the cellar door crashed open next to me. A stocky guy jumped out, ran for the back door, and instantly was gone into the dark night. I was too startled to scream, too freaked to move. After a second or two, my heart resumed beating and brain function kicked in.
What the?
I said to the empty kitchen. I heard footsteps on the stairs, and Morelli sauntered into the kitchen. He was wearing a t-shirt and boxers, and his hair was tousled.
I thought I heard you come in, he said. How is Brenda? And why is the back door open?
I was breathless.
Some guy charged out of your basement and ran out the back door.
Yeah, right.
I had my hand over my heart in an effort to keep it from jumping out of my chest.
I'm serious.
Morelli went to the door and looked outside.
I don't see anyone.
He ran away.
Morelli closed and locked the door.
Someone actually was in my cellar?
He scared the bejesus out of me.
Anyone we know?
It was dark. He was chunky, dressed in dark clothes. I didn't see his face. It happened so fast I didn't get a good look.
Hair?
He was wearing a knit hat. I couldn't see his hair.
Morelli opened a kitchen drawer, removed a gun, and stepped to the cellar door.
Wait, I said. Maybe we should call the police.
Cupcake, I am the police.
Yes. But you're my police, and I don't want you to get shot.
I'm not going to get shot. Stay here in the kitchen.
No problem with that. I had no desire to follow Morelli into his spooky basement. Morelli flipped the light switch and padded barefoot down the stairs. He stood for a moment looking around and returned to the kitchen.
I can't imagine why anyone would be in my basement, he said. There's nothing down there, just the furnace and the water heater.
Sometimes people have offices or playrooms down there, I said. Maybe he was looking for something to steal.
My laptop is on the table. He didn't take it. He left the Xbox and television in the living room.
I took a piece of pizza from the box and tried to get it to my mouth, but my hand was still shaking.
Maybe he didn't get to it. Maybe he started downstairs and I scared him off.
Morelli dialed dispatch and reported the break-in.
Ask someone to do a couple drive-bys and keep their eyes open, he said.
Bob trotted into the kitchen and stood looking at the pizza box. He couldn't hear a burglar break into the house, but wave a piece of pizza around, and he was there. Pink and green fluorescent paint glowed in the dark on Bob's back.
The label on the spray paint said it would wash off with water. I'll hose him down tomorrow, Morelli said.
I fed Bob my crust, and Bob smiled and wagged his tail. Morelli draped an arm across my shoulders.
There's a way you could make me look that happy.
Someone just broke into your house. How can you think about sex?
I always think about sex.
Mario is in the guest room.
Yeah, you'd have to try to control yourself and not make a lot of noise.
He's just a kid. You need to set a good example.
Which means what?
The couch. Zook's in the guest room and you wanted me to spend the night, so I assumed you'd sleep on the couch.
You assumed wrong.
We're not married.
No, but we're old. There are different rules when you get old,
Morelli said. I'm not old.
Not to me, but to Zook, anyone over 20 is old.
Okay, that does it. I'm going home. I'll be back tomorrow morning at the crack of dawn.
Oh, for Christ's sake, Morelli said. I'll sleep on the friggin' couch. There's a sleeping bag in my office. Throw it down with a pillow.
I opened my eyes and squinted at the clock. The room was dark, but the glowing blue digital readout told me it was 5 in the morning. And the sound of a drawer being opened and closed told me I wasn't alone. I reached for the bedside lamp, switched it on, and stared at Morelli. His hair was damp from the shower, he was freshly shaved, and he was naked.
What's going on? I asked him.
I need clothes.
No kidding.
I would have gotten them for you. What if Mario sees you walking around naked in my room?
First, it's not your room, it's my room. Second, I doubt he'd be shocked. You have to stop worrying about Zook. Third, he's asleep.
Did you sleep okay?
No, the couch sucks.
Morelli was dressing in his usual uniform of jeans and t-shirt while he was talking. If the occasion dictated, Morelli sometimes wore slacks and a dress shirt, but Morelli avoided suits. He looked like an Atlantic City pit boss in a suit, and no one could keep a straight face at Morelli in khakis. Morelli was as far from preppy as a guy could get. He sat on the bed, laced his shoes, leaned over me, and nuzzled my neck.
I like when you're all warm and soft from sleep.
He looked down at the shoes he'd just laced and thought for a moment.
These could come off.
Tempting. Really tempting. Will you be late for work if you take your shoes off?
Yeah. Don't care. If the choice was a promotion and raise or doing you and getting fired, there'd be no contest.
The power of testosterone.
I thought it was love, but you could be right. It could be testosterone,
Morelli said.
Not that it matters, because bottom line is, I want you bad.
I had the t-shirt halfway over his head.
Take your shoes off. Fast, I told him.
There were scuffling sounds in the hall and a timid knock on the bedroom door.
Anybody home? Zook asked.
Morelli flopped spread eagle onto the bed.
Crap.
Uno momento,
I called to Zook.
I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do, Zook said from the other side of the door. Should I go downstairs and look for cereal?
Yeah,
Morelli said.
Just prowl through the cupboards. Stephanie will be down in a couple minutes.
I was already out of bed and searching for clothes. I went with one of Morelli's t-shirts and a pair of his sweats. I stayed over from time to time, but I didn't leave a lot of things at his house. Some underwear, socks, an extra pair of running shoes, some unmentionable personal products. Zook had a box of Frosted Flakes in his hand when I walked into the kitchen. My favorite, I said to him.
Do you live here?
Sometimes.
So you could be my, what, aunt in sin?
It's my understanding that Morelli's some sort of distant cousin, so technically I wouldn't be an aunt of any sort. I took a carton of milk from the refrigerator and set out a couple bowls. Morelli waltzed in and got coffee brewing.
You're up early,
Morelli said to Zook.
When do you have to be at school?
Not until 8, but I didn't know how long it would take to walk.
You're not walking,
Morelli said.
Stephanie's taking you to school, and she's gonna watch you go through the door.
Dude, that is so untrusting, Zook said.
Yeah, deal with it.
Bob was sitting, tail wagging, looking at the cereal box. I knew Morelli had already walked and fed Bob, but that was meaningless in the world of Bob. Bob was the bottomless pit when it came to food. Bob was also the poster dog for canine graffiti art. I looked more closely and realized the pink and green swirls outlined in black on his back spelled out Zook.
Pretty cool, huh? Zook said.
Morelli cut his eyes to Zook.
It's not cool. You painted my dog.
Yeah, dude, he's awesome and totally arcane.
What's arcane mean? I asked.
Magical.
I thought I saw some steam starting to wisp out of Morelli's ears and off the top of his head. Why don't you grab a donut and some coffee on the way to work? I said to Morelli. I'll take care of everything here. Morelli blew out a sigh and felt his pockets for Rolaids.
I have to run anyway. Early morning meeting. See you tonight.
He gave me a quick kiss and left the house. When I heard the door close, I turned on Zook.
What the heck were you thinking? You don't go around painting a man's dog without his permission. You don't even do it with his permission. It's rude and insensitive and wrong.
I was yelling and waving my arms, and Zook was calmly pouring milk on his cereal. I leaned palms on the table and got into his face.
Are you listening?
Zook looked up at me.
What?
I'm yelling at you.
I didn't notice. It sounded like dinner at my grandma's house.
Okay, I could relate to that.
Did you paint anything other than Bob?
I sort of painted the garage.
I went to the back door and stared out at the garage. It looked a lot like Bob. Zook, in bright pink and green, outlined in black. Magical designs swirled around the name. It was glowing in the semi-dark.
Has Morelli seen this?
I don't think so. He didn't say anything.
You need to lose the paint before he gets home.
But it represents the power of Zook. It's my portal.
What do you mean it's your portal?
Okay, so it's not a portal, but it could be someday.
You're not serious.
That's the way it happens in the game.
This isn't the game.
Yeah, but Zook likes to keep in the zone.
I squelched a major mental head slap. It could be worse, I told myself. He could be spending his day surfing porn sites. I was still at the back door, and it occurred to me that I wasn't seeing any sign of forced entry from last night. I went to the front door and checked out the lock and the door jamb. No forced entry there, either. I went window to window, all locked and intact. Hard to believe Morelli hadn't locked the back door. That meant either someone let the intruder in, the intruder was good with locks, or he had a key.
Did you let anyone into the house yesterday? I asked Zook.
The pizza delivery guy.
He didn't go into the cellar and stay there, did he?
No, he left in his pizza car.
I sat at the little kitchen table with Zook and ate a bowl of cereal and drank my coffee. I had a bad feeling about the guy in the cellar, and I didn't know what to do about Zook. He was pushing his cereal around in his bowl, letting it get sogged up with milk. He was frowning and chewing on his lip.
What?
I asked him.
Nothing.
It's something. What is it?
It's my stupid mother sitting in that stupid jail.
You're worried about her, I said.
It's all her own stupid fault. She robbed a stupid liquor store. I mean, it wasn't even a bank. A bank I could see. That could be lots of money. My uncle robbed a bank and they never found the money and now he's out and he's going to be on Easy Street. But my dumb mother robbed a liquor store and all she took was a bottle of gin. And now my stupid relatives won't even bail her out.
Connie's working on it. Hopefully we'll find a way to get your mom out today. In the meantime, Morelli will look in on her and make sure she's okay.
I don't ever want to grow up. Growing up sucks. People do stupid things.
Growing up isn't so bad, I told him. What do you want to do when you get out of school? He kept his eyes glued to his bloated cereal.
You'll think it's dopey.
And?
I want to be an engineer and design roller coasters.
I was dumbstruck.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, except I'll never get into college because my grades suck and we have no money.
So fix your grades and go to a state school. That's what I did. You could even try for a scholarship.
Morelli called on my cell phone.
Tell Zook or whoever the hell he is today that his mom says hello. She isn't happy, but she's managing.
Thanks, I'll pass it on. Any information on last night?
You mean the break-in? No. No other disturbances in the neighborhood.
Chapter 4 Connie was at her desk when I walked into the office. I dumped my shoulder bag on the couch and cut my eyes to Vinny's inner sanctum. The door was closed.
He's not here, Connie said. He's at a bail bonds conference in Shreveport.
What's happening with Loretta Rizzi?
Not a damn thing. It's pathetic, Connie said. No one wants to take a chance on her.
You could bond her out on her own recognizance.
Vinny would kill me.
He wouldn't have to know.
Vinny knows everything. He has this office bugged.
I thought you debugged it.
He keeps hiding new ones.
I have to get Loretta out. Morelli and I aren't ready for parenthood. If I was going to target one of her relatives, who would be my top choice?
Her brother. He's got a stash somewhere. He stole $9 million and it was never recovered.
Do you have an address?
He's staying at his mother's house on Conway Street.
I know the house.
You might want to take Lula. Word is, he's unstable.
Where is Lula?
Late, like always.
I caught a flash of red in my peripheral vision, and Lula swept through the front door. Her hair was still fire engine red, and her sweater, skirt, and shoes matched her hair.
Speak of the devil, Connie said.
I ain't no devil, Lula said. I'm respectable, mostly. I'm an engaged woman. I got a ring and everything. I told you I had a feeling.
She held her hand out, and we looked at her ring.
Wow, that's a big diamond, Connie said. Is it real?
Sure it's real, Lula said. I got it in the Diamond District on 8th and Remington.
That's the projects, Connie said.
Yeah, Scooch Brown runs that corner. He said this was a real good ring. He gave me a good price on it.
So it was okay with Tank that you bought the ring?
Tank got a real important job, Lula said. He don't necessarily have time to go shopping for shit like this.
Does he know he's engaged?
Of course he knows, Lula said. It was real romantic, too. He came over and we always get right to it, if you know what I mean. So anyway, we got that out of the way, and then Tank fell asleep and I put the ring on. And then when Tank woke up, I told him how happy I was and how he was such a sweetie. And then I celebrated by making him feel real good, and after that he fell asleep again.
Congratulations, I said to Lula. When's the wedding?
I haven't decided that. June might be nice.
That's next month.
Yeah,